And I think what was written up on the little flower was Buddhism and social action or something. Okay. So that it's a topic, of course, that you can talk on and on about, and there's many aspects to consider. So I'm only going to be able to, of course, talk about a few aspects, and I just hope, just recognize that I can't give a complete picture, and I would just sort of try to give some vignettes or some reflection, so that there's something to consider. And then also after the topic, and people can ask any questions about things which hasn't sort of been clarified. I think in considering Buddhism and social action, the sense of what social action is, and because I think from a Buddhist perspective, anything which is to do with other people is social action. How you actually relate to other people, the world around you, say individuals who are close to you, family, neighbors, village, society at large. So it expands out, but it comes back to ourselves, of course, and then how we relate to other people, and our responsibilities to ourselves in relationship to other people, so that there's a necessity to first recognize that the core of what is the relationship to any social aspect is the individual, and we're always returning to that core, and how we affect other people and the society around us, so that a certain recognition our actions affect others. And this is just on the basic law of karma. Anything we do has an effect which affects ourselves and affects others. And to understand how that's affected, we have to be able to understand ourselves and be able to see ourselves more clearly. So that it's not sort of me and then the society outside, and that as if they're two separate things. Those are something, they're interrelated all the time, and how we what we bring to the society around is actually what our own quality of mind, or quality of heart, or quality of being, our intention, and how we fulfill those intentions in our actions around. So that there isn't really a separation between ourselves and social action, really. It's something which is interrelated and dependent on each other. So that the training that we do in actually training ourselves is as important as, say, anything we do outside. It's just, it's because that's the core. That's the, and what we say, the ability that we have to help others or do anything which is going to affect others is dependent on the quality of clarity and intention and integrity with which we've sort of looked after ourselves. So that those are inseparable. And like in Buddhist practice, you've got a training which is beginnings of say the path of practice, which is laid out for an individual, is the foundation for how you practice with others. So that, say, the practice of precepts, of a certain, say, keeping precepts, is already social action, in a sense, not harming others, not, say, not being dishonest in the way one deals with others, not being trustworthy in the way one, in one's actions and speech. These are already social action, because how we what we the actions that we do are going to affect others, so that it's just on something which is oftentimes, you know, about, you know, let's get to the real stuff about Buddhism, sort of the, you know, the liberation part, sort of enlightenment, and then something like just sort of keeping the precepts is just not really it's just sort of social convention, or, you know, just something that's not really much. It's in basic sort of stuff, but basic stuff has an effect, and that's an important consideration. Why those things like precepts are actually there, and this, you know, because the Buddha recognized that what we do has effects, and and they have effects for ourselves, they have effects for others. So that to be able to have a certain standard for reflection, so that we can start to see, well, what are those effects? You know, when we talk about something like the interdependent nature things, it's not a really sort of lovely philosophical theory. It's actually how it works in our day-to-day life, and that has to be sort of recognized on very ordinary activities. Like sometimes people can get all enthused about social responsibility and social obligations and forget to deal with our family. How do we deal with the people who we're most close to? Or how do I even pick up the phone and answer somebody? You know, just something. What do I put into the universe? You know, when somebody phones and it's, you know, some that you're not really prepared to talk to or get irritated with, But that's social action. So that's these are very ordinary day-to-day things are preparing the ground for how we relate to the world around us. So that just on very ordinary actions and speech, and these are the things that we work with, and dealing with just the circle of people around us who we live with and we have responsibilities towards. These are part of social action. It's not different. The training in Buddhism is the classical way of framing it is in virtue, meditation, wisdom. So that virtue is concerning around actions and speech. The meditation is around a mental training. The training of the heart, a clarifying of mindfulness, awareness, composure of awareness. And that is essential to cultivate. If one's going to deal with other people, you've got to deal with other people with a clear mind. If you're going to take social responsibility, it has to be done with an open heart and a clear mind. It's really the essence. And this is from a Buddhist perspective. This is laying the groundwork, laying the foundation for how we deal with other beings. Recognizing the quality of wisdom is many different levels of wisdom, but seeing things as they truly are is the sort of the essence of wisdom. And this reflective ability of the mind to see things as they are, understand things as they truly are. We start to turn toward that. It's not some sort of bit of knowledge or some kind of experience of being zapped with enlightened energy is what wisdom is all about. It's about seeing things clearly as they truly are, and then so that. That's what we also have to turn towards in this cultivating of wisdom and allowing our lives to be guided by that wisdom. So it's like a turning inward to be able to open to what are the way things truly are. How does this affect myself? How does this affect others? What is the way to freedom and liberation? What is the way out of suffering and dissatisfaction for myself and for others? And that's always that refrain in the Buddha's teachings is always that sense. For oneself and for others is always that they're always there. It's not just how do I get free from suffering myself, but it's how does that affect myself and others? It's always they go together. So that the aspect of wisdom is seeing in different ways. How we can be free, and seeing in different ways how we entangle ourselves in things which create more complications. So that these are the tools that we use in training ourselves and how we relate to the world around us. It's an ongoing training, which is going to affect how we live in the world. When we consider also in terms of wisdom, you know, what are the wisdom sees, what is it that brings true benefit, so that the qualities of which bring true benefit are so the qualities of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. These are called the divine abodes, which one turns toward for oneself, and one also creates the causes for oneself and others to share in. So that's a goal in terms of social. How should human beings live? So the qualities of, you know, human beings have the opportunity to live in a way which is sharing in qualities of kindness. Qualities of kindness is the wishing for each other's happiness. Compassion is the quality which wishes to alleviate the suffering of others. So it's like they're kind of a pair, where one wants people to share in well-being and happiness, and the other wants to sort of lift the suffering of others. Quality of joy is interesting that they say, like, when they talk about the quality of joy, its enemy is jealousy, so that, or envy. And so envy is like the foundation of competition and the kind of conflicts which we have with others, in not appreciating them or running them down in some way, or belittling other people's efforts or whatever. There's a certain quality of envy or jealousy that is feeding that, so that with our practice and training to turn toward the quality of joy, by being able to draw self-centered wish to just for one's own gratification and wanting to help others or be of service in some way to others, then there's a tremendous amount of joy is released from that. And that's a part of how we, you know, in terms of social interaction, if a society is based on competitive accumulation, like some societies we know, it creates a lot of conflict and a lack of appreciation and willingness to enjoy each other, which is one of the things that was very striking in Thailand, because Thailand is I lived there for 23 years. I had the opportunity to see the the society in different ways, and it's a there's lots and lots of problems in the society, but there's also some extraordinary good things that are and there are. Now, one of the things that was very interesting to see is the even though there's a wide sort of stratification of society in terms of socioeconomic levels, opportunities that people have within the society, there's not a lot of envy or a lot of even competition. It's just people are motivated, and there's a certain opportunity for people to, if somebody wants to make the effort, then they can. The actual stratification of society is not necessarily a hindrance. But people don't sort of resent. There's not a resentment to people who actually have wealth or privilege. And there's usually not a kind of looking down or a shunning of others who haven't, aren't sort of maybe in have some economic difficulty, or they come from poor backgrounds, things like that. It just doesn't seem to work that way. There's an acceptance of the different, and I think one of the, again, I think this is just the sense of, it's imbued in people's consciousness, the sense of karma playing a factor in people's lives, over many lifetimes people have accumulated different tendencies and different abilities, and it's not a fixed thing, because who knows what one this life, that karma is not a fixed thing, and it's not, this lifetime can change, other lifetime can change. It's a long view on it, and that takes away that kind of edge of selfishness or competitive, and there's a sense of appreciation of each other as human beings, which is very, simplifies things a lot. But any qualities like this within our own way of living, or within a society, a sense of loving kindness, compassion, joy, also has to be surrounded with the quality of equanimity, being able to, and equanimity is like a non-reactive clarity, which allows one to stay centered. And it's not like an indifference. Sometimes you read translations of the words, and translators in former times used to translate the word as indifference, or which doesn't get it, and even equanimity is not really recognized very much as a quality, especially in the West, because what good is equanimity? There's nothing there. You get out and get something passionate, do something. But being able to actually return to a place of stillness, to be non-reactive and weigh things carefully, it's a very important quality, which allows all the other things to balance. So, and particularly in terms of our own life and how we relate to other beings, and especially dealing with social action, with social responsibility, we really have to return to a quality of equanimity and have that as a foundation. Because without it, then we get drawn into either our own reactiveness, because we've got our views, we've got our opinions, we've got our stands, and of course they're always right. And and other people's, I mean, they're just a bunch of idiots anyway, so so there, it's easy to get turned around and out of balance, so not being drawn into the web of our opinions or our views, and just be able to settle and reflect and say, well, what is the balance? What's the way of balance? What's the way of... So that equanimity is essential in dealing with social action. When we're I think one of the qualities of, say, from a Buddhist perspective, that's important in terms of social action, is that you can't really exclude anybody. And this is something that I've seen work over and over again in the projects that I've been involved in. Taking a particular project, say like protecting forests, and the first particular forest I didn't set out to go and save forests. All I wanted to do was go out, set up the monastery that I was abbot at. It's quite a well-known monastery. It's got quite a large community in it of monks, novices, laymen, laywomen who are practicing and training there. There's a large lay community around it, and I thought it would be good as a balance to have a more remote branch monastery. So I found a remote area and went ahead and started to set it up. And shortly after we set it up, then the area around and part of it was made into a national park, which you think, wow, wonderful, it's a national park. But it was just a designation on the map, and there's a lot of problems. So it's one of the last forests in the province that I was living in. It was right along the Mekong, and you can look across to the other side into Laos, and you've got these incredible hills and forests and then the Thai side was, you've got all these sort of stumps and it had definitely been there's a lot of problems with being logged. So in order to actually do anything, you've got to find ways to, how do you include people? How do you get people involved when they're cutting the forest, and you can't just sort of, and even if it's a national park and the laws say they can't go into it and cut anything, you've got to find ways to include them. And how do you include the merchants who are paying them? How do you include the civil servants who are taking the bribes to allow that? So from the Buddhist perspective is very sort of helpful in that you can't just sort of say, you know, these are awful nasty people and they should be sort of, if they weren't on the planet, it would be, you know, it would be a fine sort of planet, and this is, you know, they're there and they're people just like us, and they're trying to look after their families and their children, and they're trying to get ahead in the world, and it's the Buddhist perspective was always saying, you know, the problems come from people not understanding how they're creating suffering for themselves and suffering for others. Problems and suffering come from desires and attachments, and there. So you can't just sort of wish that away. So you've got to work on the basic problems of bringing knowledge and education into their lives. What do they want out of this? You know, why are they cutting things? You know, why are they cutting the forest? What do they want out of it? Of course, they want to live comfortably. They want to look after their family. So that you've got to find ways to provide for them. And if you don't do that, it's like just sort of putting a wall of the sea is coming in here, and you want to put a wall up and stop it. Well, yeah, good luck. it's gonna find a way, so that you've got to actually think clearly and find ways which will address people's needs and to include them and bring them in, so that it's going to take time. And I think this reflects the Buddhist perspective again in terms of our own spiritual practice. And it's like, yes, we'd all like to sort of sit down cross-legged, close our eyes and become enlightened, you know, just like that. Well, we have to take time to lay the foundations and be able to be patient and clear enough to develop the path in a comprehensive and clear way. So the same applies to social problems. One, you've got to in the same way that the Buddha gives, say, the Four Noble Truths as a basis for practice for ourselves. You've got suffering, you've got the cause of suffering, you've got the cessation, the end of suffering, you've got path leading to the cessation of suffering. Well, the same thing applies to social things. Okay, you've got suffering, you've got a problem. What's the cause of that problem? And you can't just sort of wish the problem away. You've got to figure out quite clearly what are the different causes, and what would, you know, what is the, you know, what sort of goal are we looking for in terms of what kind of end of suffering is that? What end of that problem? What are we looking for? If we haven't got it really clear, what end we're going towards, we won't really know what kind of path to develop. If we haven't understood the problem, we won't be able to see the causes. So it works on a social way, as the same way it works in our own practice, so that the more we reflect in those ways and practice with those standards for ourselves, the more we're able to start to apply them in our life, with, you know, in very ordinary situations, with our friends, our family, work situation, whatever. And those are that social action, and then different problems that happen in the community, and then how do we work together to do that. So there's in Thailand the projects that I started with, the one project along the Mekong, it started with myself going, as I said, starting this branch monastery, and then saying, well, there's all these problems. You know, the forest is being cut, and then drawing in other people who are being affiliated with the monastery, were interested to help. And I think in particular with from a Buddhist society, there's a certain foundation to that you build on, because a monastery is on a certain level is a field for social action, because it's the way a monastery works is that as Buddhist monastics, we're not allowed to have, say, money. We're not allowed to have we're not allowed to grow food or even for ourselves to store food. So it's dependent on people supporting it, and we go on alms around each day, and people offer food to us. People come to the monastery and offer food to the monastery, and that, so there's a connection made with the society around every day. And it works so that, you know, there's the people who are close to the monastery and support it on a day-to-day basis. There's people who come from fairly often. There's people who come from time to time. There's people who, you know, sort of show up once in a blue moon. But it's all sort of a web of support and interaction, so that the one, by being in the center of a place where people are coming into the monastery for either helping to support it, once a week coming to listen to talks on the observance days, people come for advice, they come for when in sort of transitions within their life, sort of marriages, birth, death, you know, they come, or, you know, big changes in their life, they come to the monastery, they ask questions, they seek consultation, so that there's this web of interaction. And when there is a certain problem in the community, then you can also recognize, well, who's interested in helping, and so you put it out to people, and then that's how it started. We've got a few people involved, and at first there was volunteers, then there was more work than was possible for volunteers to do, so that we hired some people to work full time, and that was again the money that was for people's salaries was from, I was given quite a large sum of money to go, and I was going to go home to visit family. So people offered a lot of money. I was about, for the first time before I went home to visit family, about 16 years, so that it was a big thing. People wanted, so, oh, you should be going to visit family. So okay, so there was money offered, and I didn't need it, so we can use that for salaries for people, so that the salaries for it, so it came out of money that people offered to the monastery, and it just sort of grew from that, and then drawing in other people, and drawing in people like the police, who police in Thailand it's not a particularly respectable position, but it's lucrative. So there's a saying in Thais that they love sort of punning and playing on words, and the Thai language is a lot of vowels and tones, so the sound is really the sound is really lovely. So that there's a saying that's playing on the words, and it says if you're the wife of a military officer, you end up counting empty bottles. If you're the wife of a police officer, you end up counting banknotes. So police are not, but they've got power in the, especially when it comes to controlling who's taking logs out, so rather than sort of getting into a confrontation with them, how do you work with them? How do you draw them in? And so that start finding ways. That was very easy for me at that time, because one of the supporters of the monastery and one of the first volunteers to help was the deputy superintendent of police, and he was seen as kind of a crackpot, because about 5 or 6 years before, he's just changed his life around, stopped drinking, stopped being dishonest, and was really he'd been quite honest all along, but he'd sort of changed his life, stopped drinking, started keeping the 8 precepts, only eating one meal a day. But he was a great resource for drawing in other honest police officers and getting them out to their area to sort of have a few words with the other police officers. And get them on our side. The local politicians who control things. You see, it's actually, you know, recognizing who's got the power and how are they using it, and then how do you draw them in? So that you know, it takes time and for it to gain the trust that what you've got is the best interest of everybody. So that takes time, it takes patience, it takes clarity, and if you come in with sort of from a confrontational way, then it's difficult to do that. So, but if you come in from everybody's suffering. Because it doesn't actually make their lives any better. So that with their best interests, you sort of, you know, how do you draw people in so that they are able to help? And that's been an ongoing process. We managed to draw in the military. In Thailand, the military is very, very powerful, seen as an institution which is respected. But it has many, many factions. And Thailand's gone through phases of military dictatorship and sort of democracy. And I guess it was 92, 93. Some people might have heard. There was a sort of an uprising against that current military dictatorship, and it was a lot of lives were lost. The military was disgraced. Within the society. So one of the things that, because of the resources that they've got, one of the things that they saw that they could do was help in the protection of forests. So drawing the military in, which is normally, you know, you wouldn't do that. But circumstances were such that it was advantageous at that time, so that it's like actually being able to recognize what are the opportunities, what's available, and you know, sometimes you get allied with people or circumstances that you would never have thought would happen, but that's what's happened. And I think one of the things of having a strong focus on one's own personal practice and personal integrity is that the more clear and more centered and more pure-hearted one's own intention is of doing good, one starts to connect with other people. It seems to be a magnet. It seems to draw other good people to one. So that in terms of social action, it's just so important to keep a quality of you know, pure-heartedness and clear integrity, because one, it's for one's own benefit. One feels so much better anyway. But then it starts to draw other good people to you, and the more good people you can that are helping, then it gets its own momentum going. There was one of the last elections in Thailand. I saw a sign. No, it was handwritten, like handwritten on a, on the side of a building. They were saying something like, "If you know, the forces of corruption are given more power when good people retreat." And it's a, it's, you know, I think, because sometimes you say, well, you know, I just don't want to deal with it. I'm fed up with it. You know, the system is hopeless. But the system has more momentum when, say, when good people retreat. I think that's important, that the more goodness that, that is. And it may sound really hokey, but it's true. and it's something which is not, well, sometimes we don't think, because it's not tangible, it's not sort of clear, it's not sort of but from my own experience I've seen that happen, and they're like the people that sort of spring up out of nowhere sometimes are quite interesting. The forest that I've been, another one along the border of Burma that I have been involved in, I'm still involved in, protecting. The problems there are much more difficult, because the degree of official collusion and the amount of money that is there. The forest is pristine. There's still elephants, tigers, rhinoceros, which are considered extinct entirely. And they're still there. The forest is, it's like the last area in that, this huge sort of area, and it's like it hasn't been touched, so that the all the animals and species of birds and whatnot have all, that's the last island where they hasn't been touched. So I put a lot of effort into trying to protect it. We've got a monastery there, and but it's also an area which has a very different temperament than the area where, say, the northeast of Thailand, where the main monastery is. There's this fundamental faith in and respect for Buddhism and for monasteries and for monastics, which on the sort of the western side of the country, it's much more wild and woolly and much more rough, coarser, not so much sort of fundamental respect, and much more kind of power and influence and money involved. And also the sort of the level of violence is much higher. So the stakes are much higher. Remember when I first, I had lived there. The reason why I knew the place, I'd spent a year on retreat in the area, sort of around, and then spent about 5 months in that place on retreat, solitary retreat, at a time when it had, it was untouched for as soon as you sort of got off the highway across the river, then all the way to the border, which was about 70 kilometers, was untouched. Then I went back about 8 or 9 years after that to visit, and it was very disheartening to see the degree of destruction, how quick it had disappeared in the areas coming in. And there hadn't been a monk in there for... I took a group in to do a bit of a retreat. And there hadn't been a monk in there since I'd been there 8-9 years before that. So that it was a tin mine site, and there was several tin mines around the area, and that was the last one that was left. So the villagers were very happy, because one of the reasons they're happy because there hadn't been any monks come in, and there hadn't been, so people had died, and no proper funeral rites had been given to any of the families. So one of the things they wanted us to do was do a collective ceremony for all the people who had died in the previous 8-9 years. So I went, and part of it was to actually disinter some of the remains, to use that as part of a group cremation. So they had an area for us, which is traditional, sort of like a charnel ground. The dead were buried there, and there was only two causes of death. One was malaria, and the other were gunshots. That was all. So it was very rough. And so, as I said, in the area, you know, the stakes were high. So, again, you know, how do you work with a situation like that? And just by starting to draw people in, allow the people to know, again, recognizing that there are good people who are interested, and starting to look and say, well, who would be interested to help with this? Who would see the value in this? And then getting those people involved. And you know, it's in a national park, and one of the main people who are involved in the destruction is the director of the national park, and you know, anybody and who controls access into the region is the Border Patrol Police. Well, they're the head of the Border Patrol Police is in, and the people who control different things in law was the head of the military. Well, he was involved. So you know, every level was seemed to be blocked. And so then, getting going above those people on the local level, and then going and talking to people in the Department of Forestry, checking out, you get to know people, who's actually an honest official in the forestry, sort of finding that out. And then drawing them in, again, sort of fortuitous things happen. There's a woman who practices at our monastery very regularly. She's built a meditation hut. Meditation hut is not the word, it's rather large. She's comfortable. at the monastery. But then ends up that her sort of adopted sort of a younger adopted brother is the deputy head of the Border Patrol Police for the country. Ah, okay, so we've got it, we've got a way in. So he transfers the person out, sends somebody, he knows who's honest, he sends him in. Things like that happen, and you know, you slowly sort of, what ended up happening, who's really interested in forums is one of the princesses. She's really involved. So one of the monks who's at the monastery, his mother's sister works for the princess. Ah, okay, got a line in. So got a letter to the princess, and she oh wow, help out, and then she realized that it was actually quite big. So she said, well, and the people who work with her, maybe we'll do this much, but maybe you should have the queen involved. So all of a sudden, you've got people involved, and it was just through just the intention to do something good. And these things, it works. And you have to be patient, you have to be discerning, and you have to be equanimous. And you have to be willing to fail also. And you have to be willing to recognize that sometimes things will work and sometimes they won't work. And sometimes they'll work out in a way that you could never have conceived of. So it's just like being able to always retreating back to the foundation of one's own practice, keeping the precepts, developing clarity, a peace of mind, tranquility, reflective investigation for establishing of wisdom, developing the qualities of kindness, compassion, joy and equanimity. Those are the foundation that one builds for oneself and allows that to see how it starts moving out into the realm of social action, and how one makes choices of where one's what you get involved in, or what you want to put your energy into, so that those are a few reflections. For all, I think I'll end that here. Mm. Mm.